What's going on, everybody? This is Black Men Sundays. I'm your host, Corey Sylvester Murray, and we're talking about generational wealth, finance, business, and today we're talking about mental health. It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate. And before we introduce today's guest, my brother Eric from Huntsville, aka Hunts Vegas, Alabama A&M alumni. Who do you have for our Black Men Sunday spotlight, my brother?
Hey, Corey, thank you so much for that wonderful introduction. But I have a spotlight for you. I'm going to knock your socks off today. Hey, how many schools you know can say they started from nothing and lasted 150 years? And in 1875, Dr. William Hooper Council, which was born into slavery, founded a school for students of freed slaves on the hills of nowhere else, Huntsville, Alabama. They called this school Huntsville Normal School, and he called it a dream for our people. That dream grew into Alabama A&M University. And this year, actually yesterday, we celebrate 150 years of Black brilliance doing homecoming. Now, from classrooms that once had dirt floors to become a university for producing engineers, scientists, educators, and leaders, A&M has proven or become proof that we can build greatness out of struggle. Generations, including myself, have immediately walked on that hill. They have marched in that band, including myself again, shouting, "Go Bulldogs," and meant every word of it. 150 years later, that vision still stands stronger, louder, and prouder. Black excellence did not start yesterday. It actually started 150 years ago. That's my presentation for today, my spotlight. And again, Corey, back to you.
So you just had to mention Alabama A&M, man. You said the hill. You know, I was thinking about the hill, man. A&M. You know, the hill is on Tallahassee, still, man.
Hey, when Tallahassee and FAMU can say they did 150 years, you got 20 more years to go. When y'all can do that, you can come talk to me then.
Okay, well, you know, we'll be seeing y'all on the football field in a couple weeks anyway, so.
Man, y'all ain't winning nothing, so we'll see. We see how y'all doing this year, so.
Hey, man, well, I appreciate that spotlight, my brother.
Hey, I appreciate you, man.
Definitely. Well, all right, let's go on to introduce today's guest. Now, on Black Men Sundays, we talk about generational wealth. We talk about mental health, but we've never talked about this topic. We're talking about maternal mental health. So what did I do? I brought on a maternal mental health therapist. This sister is a CEO and psychotherapist at Inspired Counseling Center, LLC. She's also a licensed clinical social worker, over 10 years experience. She's doing her thing, and we have to welcome her, Dr. Shaynor Ishmael. Welcome to Black Men Sunday, sister. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. Talk about the tournament to health.
Definitely. So, you know, like I tell guests when they come on the show, and we have terminology. So before we get into it, we're going to talk about PPD. Just tell us what PPD means.
Yes. So PPD is postpartum depression. So it is basically depression after you have a baby. But PPD can also encompass what we call perinatal depression. So that's depression prior to being pregnant. So when we talk about pregnancy planning, preconception, it can also occur while you're pregnant. But the one that people are most familiar with, like you mentioned, is PPD, which is the postpartum depression. It is very, very popular, so to speak, unfortunately. 1 in 8 individuals will experience PPD after having children.
Got you. Now, thanks for clarifying that. Now let's have our conversation. First off, what is maternal mental health?
So maternal mental health is the psychological, social, and emotional well-being of birthing individuals before, during, and after pregnancy. So we encompass their entire well-being, not necessarily the medical or physical piece, but how they're doing mentally. We take that into consideration when we talk about healing in the postpartum period.
So let's talk about Black maternal health.
Black maternal health. It is such a weighted topic to bring into orbit because first we talk about the mortality rate, the maternal mortality rate for Black women. And that's often where I start because it's a very jarring statistic when we talk about 4 in 5 pregnancy related deaths are preventable. But 80% of Black women experience pregnancy-related deaths. The CDC released a report in February that showed that for Black women, maternal mortality is increasing, where for other individuals, other ethnicities, maternal mortality is decreasing. So when we start there, we start with the mental weight that Black women carry in preconception, pregnancy, and postpartum, in the sense of, I just want to come out of this alive. That in itself is a weight. And then also we talk about the notion where Black women have a higher, disproportionately higher rates of predisposition to maternal mental health complications. There's a sense where the weight that we carry in motherhood is often not highlighted, so to speak, because it falls under the umbrella of this strong Black woman mantra that we carry. And therefore we feel this weight, we carry this weight, but then we also unfortunately normalize it. So when we talk about Black maternal mental health, when I say it is such a weighted conversation that is often not had.
Yeah, that's right. And we haven't been on Black Men Sundays today. That's why I'm just coming right with it. You know, why are Black mothers more at risk though?
Yes, absolutely. And interesting enough, it's not necessarily self-imposed or in risk. It's more so when we look at the medical systematic disparities, when we look at medical biases that occur. There are things that actually work against us as Black women. 30% of Black women express to not being heard throughout the perinatal period. When we talk about, and it's not necessarily, if you take away education status, if you take away finances, the percentage still stands. So it doesn't matter how much money you have, it doesn't matter how many degrees you have, there's still a sense where you are not being heard when you talk about what is happening to you when you are during your perinatal period.
And you mentioned the disparities. That leads right into my next question. You know, what are the disparities in Black maternal health and healthcare?
Black women are not being heard. I often bring up stories such as Serena Williams, who post-pregnancy, after she delivered, she experienced some complications. She went into the emergency room for said complications and was dismissed. She ended up having severe complications postpartum because she was not heard. When we look at, there was another physician who was actually an emergency room physician who actually passed away because she was not heard during her postpartum period when she made complaints about how she was feeling. It ended up that she had a blood clot which traveled and she passed away from it. So there are definite disparities when we talk about being heard and not heard. We also talk about disparities when we talk about pain for Black women. Unfortunately, there is the notion that Black women can tolerate a higher level of pain. Truly puts us at a disadvantage when we're having complications or when we're having conversations in which we're having pain. It's often dismissed and it's often minimized. So therefore, there's a sense as Black women, we have to be so much more engrossed in our medical care. We have to go the extra step. We have to say so much more to actually have action being taken. And that in itself affects your mental health, because sometimes there's a sense where they can get discouraged, they can get frustrated. There's a sense where we can even have these symptoms come in. So we talk about postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, postpartum OCD. We have these symptoms that can come in prematurely simply because of the disparities that we're experiencing.
For the brothers listening that are saying, like, what are the signs? How do I know if my wife is even having these issues?
We have the signs and symptoms that are taught to us as textbook, right? So we have the sadness. We have the sense of not connecting with others. We have the isolation. We have the crying spells when we talk about postpartum depression, not bonding with baby. But what I've come to notice is that for Black women, we don't typically walk the stereotypical signs and symptoms because of the trope of the strong Black woman. Right. So for Black women, it's very important to listen to what they're actually saying. They may say in the sense of, man, this is harder than I thought it would be. Or they may stop hanging out with friends in the sense where I just want to be home. They may become overly protective of the baby. This is when we start talking about postpartum OCD in the sense of worry or being afraid that something harm is going to come to the baby. There's a sense where we really have to listen to what they're saying, because oftentimes function in high functioning depression or high functioning anxiety, where we are going like norm in the sense. So we might be working, we might be doing the household chores, we might be doing all the things, but the things, the words that we're saying do not align with how we're actually physically showing up.
Wow, great information. And, you know, how has maternal mental health played a role in your practice?
So that is our full specialty, maternal mental health. I actually decided to specialize in maternal mental health for my own journey as a mom. So I have littles, and just going through that journey, first is having a child during COVID and then having a second child at 27 weeks, I saw the gap that existed as it pertains to having Black therapists address this topic, creating a space for other Black women to show up. So I am actually certified in perinatal mental health in order to create a space for Black women to show up authentically. One of the things when we talk about maternal mental health is a sense of the stigma that comes with mental health. And often that stigma comes from fear. So fear of letting others into your business, so to speak. What happens in the home stays in the home. What happens in family stays in family. So when you have someone who is culturally aligned, it immediately creates a sense of trust, a sense of safety. There's a sense where they may actually understand what I'm saying. I'm not having to over-explain my experiences as a Black woman for them to understand it. So that is how the notion of maternal mental health became as the basis for my practice.
What's your personal testimony around maternal mental health?
I had my first child in January of 2020. And as we all know, the world shut down in March of 2020. And because I had a newborn, everyone was extremely afraid to come and visit me. I was extremely afraid for individuals to come and visit me. So there was a sense of isolation that began. From that isolation, there was a sense of loneliness that came in because I was home with a newborn, with my husband. It was just the three of us with basically no in-person support. There was no one to provide any kind of relief. There was no one to step in. There was absolutely no one. We literally had to figure it out on our own. And in looking for services for myself, there was a sense where, like I said, there was a gap there. Yeah, so fast forward 2.5 years, and then I had a baby at 27 weeks pregnant. We spent 3.5 months in the NICU, and that's truly highlighted my purpose in this mission. It truly reinforced for me the need for what I was doing. It highlighted the necessity in what I was doing. It put me on a path that I feel as though is my purpose. And therefore, I walk as a maternal mental health therapist very humbly in the seat that I sit, because I've been in the shoes of many of the women that I meet with. So there's a sense of empathy that I can offer.
And what about mothers that have existing mental health concerns? You know, can maternal mental health creep in that as well?
If you have pre-existing mental health challenges or complications prior to getting pregnant, you are actually at a higher likelihood of developing complications in your mental health as it pertains to preconception, conception, and postpartum. One of the things I talk about often when I say preconception is the sense where getting pregnant doesn't always go as we anticipate it to happen. So for some individuals, we experience fertility challenges. Some individuals, we experience loss, such as miscarriages. And there's a sense where if you have a pre-existing mental health condition, this may actually make that condition be more rampant, so to speak. So I often encourage women, if you are thinking about getting pregnant, or the minute you find out that you are pregnant, to obtain a therapist that specializes in perinatal mental health or maternal mental health. And even just the life transition of it can be sometimes very challenging. And like I said, if you have depression before, or if you have anxiety before, or if you have a mood disorder, so if you have like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, there's a sense where that can be exacerbated.
And talking about, you know, pre and postnatal, what are mental health issues that affect the moms?
Yes. So we talk about postpartum depression. We have what we call our perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. So that is a group of disorders that are specifically assigned to the perinatal period. So we have perinatal depression, perinatal anxiety, perinatal OCD. We also have perinatal psychosis, perinatal bipolar disorder. With if you have a mom who is experiencing perinatal psychosis, that is a medical emergency because she has a break in reality. So there's a sense where she may be having hallucinations, visual or auditory hallucinations. So if you have anyone who is experiencing perinatal anxiety, perinatal psychosis, it is extremely important that you immediately refer them to the emergency room for medication management because there is a correlation between perinatal psychosis and harm to the mother and harm to the baby.
What warning signs, because we're speaking to the brothers too, this is Black Men's Sunday. So what warning signs can we tell if our wife is having some issues?
And that is a really good question because oftentimes family members are not aware that they are struggling, that the mom is struggling. So it's very important, one, to be present. The only way you can see the warning signs is if you are present. If you are not present, you will not see it. So the first thing is to, one, see how often she interacts with the baby. That is often a telltale sign. Is she connecting? Is she bonding with the baby? One of the questions I ask moms every single time they come into session is, when was the last time you cried? Oftentimes, they are crying in secret. You need to ask them. I am pretty sure they're crying in the shower, they're crying in the toy game feeds, in that sense. So make sure that you're actually asking the questions to see how they're doing. Just don't say, how are you doing? Say, when was the last time you cried? When was the last time you went outside? There's a sense where it is important to see how much socialization they are embracing, and often also how inclined are they to socialize with others. That is one of the telltale signs for depression. When we talk about postpartum anxiety, oftentimes we look at the sense of racing thoughts. So we talk about the sense of ask them, what do you have on your to-do list for today? What do you have on your to-do list for this week? If they list off a plethora of things that are not actually accomplished, are able to be accomplished in the time frame that you ask them, there's a sense where they may be experiencing some anxiety. But in order to know how they're doing, you have to be present and you have to be okay with having the hard conversations. I often refer to what I call the 2 a.m. buddy. I feel as though every mom should have a 2 a.m. buddy because that's often when we find the most challenge in that midnight to 6 a.m. time frame. They have to have someone that they can reach out to. If you are that person that they're reaching out to, if they call you at 2:30 in the morning, you need to answer. There's a sense where there's something that is happening that you need to figure out what is going on and address it. But like I said, in order to figure out what is happening, we have to be get comfortable in having these hard questions. We have to get comfortable in asking these hard questions because fortunately, unfortunately, Black women are often high functioning, in the sense where they're able to disguise the actual true emotion that they're feeling in the everyday. So you actually have to have the conversation to have them pull it out, so to speak.
What impacts does maternal mental health have on the baby?
So there is an intrinsic tie between a mother's mental health and a baby's well-being. Mentally, if the mom is not doing well, studies have shown that it impacts the child's development socially, developmentally. We may run into educational challenges if the mom is experiencing mental health challenges. Therefore, it is extremely important that mom has a true support team to help her navigate throughout the perinatal period to be proactive in preventing these challenges. We talk about the attachment styles. So for individual, for human, the way we attach or connect with other people is actually developed from whoever our primary caregiver is. Often the primary caregiver is the parents, sometimes it's not, but oftentimes it is the parents, mainly the mother. Therefore, the attachment style that you have with your mom actually dictates the attachment style that you have in adulthood when we start building relationships, whether it's romantic relationships or friendship relationships, unless we've had an intervention such as therapy to shift the negative attachment styles. So there's a sense where the connection between mom and connection between baby goes beyond just mom and baby. It goes all the way until adulthood.
Wow. And I'm going to pause right there and let my brother engage with you for a little bit.
Thanks for taking time with us. My name is Kalali Dogbe. I'm on the show. I always like to thank everybody for taking their time, because you could be doing other things, but you're taking your time sharing this information with us. Y'all have already had a really, really robust conversation. Like, I feel like Corey might have asked all the questions. But because I didn't even know that. So I knew about postpartum depression. That's been something that's been talked about. But I didn't know about, like, what do you say? Is either postpartum or perinatal anxiety and OCD?
Yes, correct. So they fall under the umbrella of the perinatal mood and anxiety disorder. So we have a list of them. We have postpartum perinatal depression, perinatal anxiety, perinatal OCD, perinatal bipolar disorder, and perinatal psychosis. So those are the core ones that we often discuss.
Okay. And are those generally like temporary situations, or, well, how long do they generally last, or any of those situations or conditions?
Yes. So for the perinatal period, we often look at it for a 2-year time frame. We used to look at it as 1 year, because CP used to say that postpartum period is up to 1 year. New research has shown that it is up to 2 years, and they're actually doing current research now that will actually extend potentially the perinatal period to 4 to 5 years. So we're talking about how long it takes a woman's body to recover, how long it takes her to mentally adjust to the transition, how long it takes their hormones to stabilize. There's a sense where we have done women a disservice when we talk about that 1 year period. So for those diagnoses, I often use them for 1 to 2 years. If after that 1 to 2 years, we can still be experiencing symptoms, however, it doesn't fall under the perinatal period diagnostic-wise. So it may just fall under, say, for instance, major depression or general anxiety disorder or bipolar disorder. There's a sense where we take away the perinatal diagnosis of it, but the condition itself can still exist, especially if the condition was pre-existing to pregnancy.
Yeah, I'd just like to settle on that for a minute as well, because let's say even without like postpartum issues, can we talk just a little bit, or could you clarify just a little bit for us, like, how long does it take really for a woman to like mentally, you know, say, and physically bounce back from a pregnancy?
We can look at it medically, right? So when we look at it medically, we look at how long does it take her hormones to stabilize, how long if she had a whether she had a C-section or vaginal delivery, how long does it take for that to heal? That is very, we can put a timeline on that, right? So we can say maybe a year timeline, so to speak. However, when it comes to mental health, it is very unpredictable. There is no set timeline, because it's very dependent on, one, the support that she has, and two, the life transitions that she had to go through. So the example I use is, for instance, take a mom who had her, this is her second child, so to speak. We'll just keep that first. Let's say they're both their first child. We have a mom who, this is her first child. She is a single mom. She lives on her own. She's in a city by herself, and she has very little support. That transition into motherhood may be very different from, say, a mom who has a first child, who has a partner, whose parents live down the street that can come visit and help all the time, who has friends that encourage her to re-engage back into her everyday life, who works a stable corporate job, but it's 9 to 5. When she gets off, she's off, who is financially stable, right? So if we look at those two scenarios, there's a sense where the time frame of how do we adjust to this life transition is going to be very, very different. The reason why I say that is because the number one preventative factor for developing perinatal mood and anxiety disorders is support. The more support you have, the least likely you are to develop perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. Because the more support you have, the more you can delegate, and the more you can bond with baby, and the more you can rest. And rest is a preventive factor for postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety. So there's a sense where there's not like a set timeline that by 2 years you should be good to go, or by 2 years you should be fully recovered and back engaged. Why are you still experiencing these bouts of sadness? Why are you experiencing this sense of racing thoughts with anxiety? There's a sense where, because of life circumstances, it is very unpredictable. And I feel as though that's the part that society does as a disservice for women, in the sense of like, they feel as though we should jump right back in.
I guess full transparency, I got two kids. So, you know, we've been through different cycles of pregnancy, birth, and so it's a really, you know, it's a really complex and interesting journey just to even go through. Like, my wife hasn't been diagnosed with anything postpartum or not. But there's also that situation where, just like you said, sometimes it's undiagnosed or it's underdiagnosed. So, you know, your partner might be going through it and you might not even know, and they might not even know, you know.
Correct.
Yeah. And so I guess my next question is, you know, you touched on this before with Corey, but as men, how can we like provide, can we talk about support? How can we provide more support? How can we be more supportive? Mm-hmm. How can we, you know, aside from, you know, you talked about being present, you know, so you talked about asking the right questions. Is there anything else we can do? Because the other side, and I got a two-part question, basically, because I want to preface with that, because also, you know, dealing with just like a pregnancy that doesn't have any of those diagnoses or any of those conditions is one thing. But then, you know, dealing with a pregnancy and childbirth and trying to raise a child with those conditions also going on is a different thing. How can we as men, firstly, provide, you know, more support, if there's any more support that we can provide? And then what can we do to kind of like take care of ourselves in the situation as well? Because if the mother's not responding, then a lot of times, especially as a husband, a lot of those responsibilities then fall on the man, you know, or they fall somewhere, you know, in the situation.
Correct.
And so how can we take, you know, care of, how can we provide support, but then what do we need to do to take care of ourselves as well, to make sure that we're still around to continue being present and providing support, if that makes sense?
Absolutely. That is actually a really good question. One of the things that we often do not focus on as much is preparing for a postpartum. Okay. We talk about the birth plan. What is the birth plan? How do you want your baby to be delivered? Do you want any interventions? Do you want to skin to skin? Do you want to do placenta encapsulation? There's so many things we include in the birth plan. And then we get discharged and it's like, oh, we did not plan for what we're going to do when the baby comes home. One of the things that I often encourage couples to do once they're pregnant is to figure out, even after the baby's home, I need you to sit down and figure out, what is the main priority? What is the main priority for mom? What's the main priority for dad? Then we can have a starting point. That is the start of your postpartum plan. The thing about it is, I call it, there's a 5-5-5 rule that I often refer to for the postpartum period. So 5 days in bed, 5 days around the bed, and then 5 days in the house. In that period is what I call the postpartum princess treatment. It puts the mom in a position to actually sit and actually just be still in postpartum. What then happens is, I refer to dad as the gatekeeper. Your role is to decide what gets filtered to her and what doesn't. Who gets filtered to her and who doesn't? That is your role. There's a sense where you are not necessarily taking over. There's an open communication that is happening, but you are the barrier, because it's enough of a life transition for both of you transitioning into being parents. The second piece that I often talk about, people often get caught up in the to-do list, the chores, right? So the dishes need to be washed, the food needs to be cooked, the house needs to be clean. We get so caught up in the chores that we often forget about what is priority. Priority number one for both of you, to be quite transparent, is sleep. And oftentimes when I tell couples that, they laugh, because in the newborn period, you are in the trenches. There's no such thing as sleep. Sleep is an illusion, right? It doesn't exist. That is what you need to set up. You need to set up a plan where you both can get adequate sleep, especially in that first week postpartum. That is how you set a kind of a plan where you both can sustain. Without sleep, everything falls apart, or disposition changes, or response changes, or health and wellness. Just sleep is key to health and well-being. What that may mean is how, who wakes up when the baby wakes up? Who helps with the baby in the overnights? Overnights is always the worst. There's a sense where, okay, so if I'm waking up with the baby overnight, what does that look like for me during the daytime? Do I get to sleep? There's a trade-off that happens there. And I often say the first week postpartum, because that's often when both parties are off work. Often, not always, but often. Mm-hmm. In that first week postpartum, you need to set up a plan where you get as much sleep as possible. Also, one of the number one complaints, I'll be very transparent, that I get when I sit in this chair as a therapist is moms are burnt out from having to keep the mental to-do list. There's a sense where when I have a mom that sits in my chair, there's often a sense of burnout from just the mental load. It's remembering everything, remembering to do everything, keeping track of what's done, what is needed, what's not needed. What I often say for couples, they need to write out the mental load, write it out. Whether it's something as simple as, oh, I see there's a clutter on the floor over there, who's going to do it? Write it on a list. And when you have that list, everybody just tackles it. Everybody adds to it, everybody tackles it. Whatever comes to her mind or whatever comes to your mind, you write it on the list. That is how you operate as a team. And one person doesn't carry the full load of what is happening. Say something as simple as, man, we need to get out the house for the first doctor's appointment. There's a sense where we have to do the mental math. Okay, what time do we need to wake up? What time do we need to have the baby dressed? What time do we have to have the bag packed? There's a mental math that goes in backwards to say, okay, what time do we need to get everything done so we're out the door in time? That should be a joint conversation because everybody has a role. Everybody plays a role in the postpartum period. And interesting enough, dads also experience postpartum depression. Dads also experience postpartum anxiety. And this is why I say it's not often hormonal, it's sometimes the life transition. And that is what we have to take into consideration. Sometimes we dismiss the mental health of dads because we're so focused on the hormonal impact, the hormonal changes, the body changes that are happening within the mom. But men do have postpartum depression. Men do have postpartum anxiety.
No, I appreciate that. I wish I had talked to you 8 years ago when I had my first child. Because we did all the things you mentioned, we didn't do any of them.
Correct. So there's a sense where it's understandable. It's not. It's new.
Yeah, yeah. There's no manual for it. So it's like, you know, like for instance, you know, I was handling the night shift. Like I tell anybody that I was handling the night shift with both of our children. I was handling the night shift. Oh, so you talk about sleep. There was no sleep. There's no such thing as sleep. Oh. It was like 30. you got like 2.5 hours, and then you got whatever's going on that morning. You got to deal with that, and it does take a toll. And so I guess I identify with both sides, because a lot of times it's the woman doing that and she's just delivered the baby and then she's also up all night, you know, doing you know, trying to take care of the baby, or especially if you're breastfeeding and that kind of thing. The other thing that you mentioned that I thought was really good is that mental to-do list, because I think sometimes, and this is probably going to be another conversation, so I'm going to keep it short, but a lot of times, you know, I can speak about, you know, my relationship. I've noticed that, like, my wife will have a mental to-do list. But the thing about it is, I also have a to-do list. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And we don't sit down and compare our to-do list and see if the same things are on the to-do list. So then it's this whole thing of like, okay, well, what are we really, you know, so she's having anxiety because the things on her to-do list are not checked off. And I might be having frustration because the things on my to-do list are being delayed or are being co-opted by whatever's on her to-do list. So I'm just drawing out, like, those are a couple of gems that hopefully people, you know, when they listen to this conversation will be able to really benefit from. Once again, definitely appreciate your time and answering all the questions and sharing the information with us today.
Absolutely. You are most welcome. I thank you for having me. I love having conversations about it. So there's a part where education is needed. Education is preventative in just the basis of it. The more you know, the more you're able to navigate challenges that come along.
So Dr. Shaynar, I'm going to ask you the really hard question now. Are you enjoying yourself on Black Men Sundays?
I am. I love the conversation. And I love it from the men's perspective. It does challenge my reach, so to speak, because I focus on maternal mental health. But we can never forget about the partner. The partner in all of this is just as impacted as the birthing individual. And therefore, I absolutely love this conversation. I'm having an amazing time.
Definitely. And I'm having a great time, you know, with this, because like I said, we talk about everything else. But it's like, you know, we haven't talked about the PPD, we haven't talked about maternal mental health. So I have one last question for you, and then I'm gonna let you slide because it is Sunday. So, you know, when we're talking about like DNA, like what have we learned about how, like how is DNA impacted by mental health for the mom and the baby?
That goes back to the age-old tale of nature versus nurture. Right. So there's a sense where we are genetically predisposed to certain things. Our genetics hold a lot of who we are, and that includes our mental health. So when we talk about the notion of the mom's mental health, they may have mental health challenges that are predisposed on them from their genetics, because there are certain mental health challenges that take a genetic component into consideration when we talk about prevalence. Now, when we talk about genetics as it pertains to the connection with the baby, that in itself, like I said, goes back to the age-old tale of nature versus nurture. Is it environmental, or is it your genes and how and the genetic composition that you have as a baby growing up that determines who you become, that determines your overall mental health, your overall mental well-being? There is no direct answer for that, to be honest, but there is an impact in both sense. So your DNA, your genetics, does play a role, but also the environment that you're in also plays a role. Sometimes the environment that you're in can compensate for some of our DNA, things that we're predisposed to, but not always. And then sometimes our DNA takes over from, so maybe in an environment where we should technically thrive, and we may not be thriving because of our DNA. So there's a sense where there is an interchange of both together. The goal is to have understanding of our DNA. So oftentimes during preconception or pregnancy, they offer genetic testing that can actually give you insight into your DNA, not just in the medical sense. So people often test for predisposition to things such as Down syndrome, maybe sickle cell disease, things of that nature. But we should also make sure in our genetic testing that we encompass our overall mental well-being in that sense. So they go hand in, DNA goes hand in hand with our environment. And I just want to thank you for bringing awareness to the conversation. I feel as though so many times conversations happen behind closed doors, whether it's between spouses, whether it's between friends. There's a lot of conversations happening about the challenges of motherhood. Oftentimes there's this picture painted where motherhood and postpartum should be the happiest time of your life or the most joyous time of your life. In reality, a lot of mothers are suffering and they do not vocalize that they're suffering because of the stereotypical picture that we paint that you should be happy. So I love the fact, and I thank you for putting this conversation on mainstream so mothers can understand, and especially partners and dads can understand, that it is okay to not be okay during the perinatal period. You don't have to paint this picture. There's no perfect mother. There's no perfect motherhood. You have to show up authentically as who you are so that we can get you the help that you need if you do need it.
Well, there it is. That wraps it up. Dr. Shaynor Ishmael, thanks for coming on Black Men Sundays. I appreciate you. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your wealth of information. Thank you, and enjoy your work week and enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Thank you so much for having me on Black Men Sunday. You have a great rest of your week. It's a Black Man Sunday.